Welcome to the third episode of Demol Belgium's Season 7 Recaps from Reality TV Warriors. My name is Michael Harmstone, and joining me as always is the Canadian who has an extensive collection of what Gilles de Costa would call interesting films, Logan Saunders.
Good morning. Good morning, best friend.
Nothing to brighten up your morning more than me making jokes that you have an extensive porn collection.
Yeah, I actually didn't see that one coming. No pun intended.
Ba-dum-tsh. And I like to start every podcast with one simple question. Where in the world is Logan Saunders?
I'm in Kota Kinabalu, Malaysia. Actually, this is my final day here, and then tomorrow I head off to Singapore.
And Logan is despairing of this chat because he knows the next question. Have you spent your week?
Well, it started off great, actually. I started in Bali, finishing up my trip in Bali. I was up at 2 a.m., I think, to catch the two flights to get to Kota Kinabalu, because they don't do direct flights to KK anymore. You have to go through Singapore. So technically, I've already been through Singapore, just through the airport. And I met up with our former co-host, Eamon, who has lived in KK his whole life. Hung out with him for a night, and then hung out with him the next day for a while. Now he's off doing something with Instagrammers for the World Wildlife Fund, with a bunch of Instagram divas. One person had the request of there being no celery in any of the meals, not because they have an allergy or anything to do with their beliefs. They just don't want celery in their meal. And I went to Survivor Island, or Palau Tega, where they filmed the very first season of the American version of Survivor. Saw the mud volcano.
And the British one. Cool. The British one was also filmed there.
That's actually what most of the infrastructure, I guess, for if you do a longer tour with another group, you can see more of the British Survivor sites. More of that is intact than the American one. The American one, I guess, they just pretty much just burned everything down and there's really nothing left in terms of actual sites except for this one tree. This one tree that Jervis posed next to on the day of the marooning. And then the next day, because I had the full day off, I wanted to go to the base of Mount Kinabalu and check out Kinabalu Park. So I'll make the story as brief as possible.
I hope you were fully clothed.
Yes, well, I had shorts and a t-shirt, so I'm not fully clothed for a mountain. It got quite cold later on, as I will explain. So I did my laundry in the morning, so I couldn't get out to the minivan bus right away, so I got there at 10:30 in the morning, had to wait for it to fill up. Obviously, with my luck, I was the first one into the minivan, so it was about an hour and a half to 2 hour wait, waiting for it to fill up, and then it's a 2 hour drive to get to Kinabalu Park. During the wait, I almost jumped out, because I was told the last bus to get back was at 4, but the driver and everyone else said, oh no, we'll come back at 5 o'clock. So I'm like, okay, that still gives me 2 hours up at Kinabalu Park. So we get to Kinabalu Park at about just before 3. So I had barely 2 hours to really explore the park, and you still have to make your way back. So it really wasn't that much time. Kind of wish I waited till the next day. So I get back to the meeting point, and there's no confusion where the meeting point was. It was made very clear by the driver, confirmed it with him 3 or 4 times, both verbally and with putting 5 fingers on our hands. And 4 to 5 rolls around, there's no sign of the driver. 5 p.m. rolls around, no sign. 5:30, no sign of him at all. Like, there's no confusion where he would be. Like, this is a really small area for the parking lot. There's no, like, oh, I was over on that side or anything like that. And then I contacted my hostel. Be like, I'm kind of stranded up here. Is there any way to get back down for relatively cheap or an alternative bus? And they're like, no, the best we can do is send up a taxi driver, and they're going to charge a little over the equivalent of about $70 Canadian, just under that, because it's still a 2 hour for them. It'd be like a 4 hour drive, as opposed to the $3 to take the bus one way. For a total of $6 if you take it each way. And 6 o'clock rolls around, there's still no sign of my driver. And then 6:30, I'm like, damn it, he's not coming. because I think I was the only one from the bus that needed to get back into town. I think everyone else was staying overnight or going off to Sandakan or wherever. So I'm like, I bet you he didn't come back just because he didn't think it was worth his while. And then I go to a restaurant, and then there's a nearby, the hostel told me to go to a hotel because apparently buses still run late to get back to KK. So I go over there, and they speak, well, a good enough English there. Like, there shouldn't have been any confusion about when the bus comes. And they're like, oh yeah, 8 o'clock. So I wait till 8 o'clock, or 10 to 8. I go out to wait for the bus. I wait till 9 o'clock, and I'm like, this bus isn't coming either. And a bunch of people who were wondering why I was waiting for a bus, they kept saying, oh, there's no buses that come this time of night. There's no way. So then I go back to the reception area and said, no bus came. And they're like, why were you waiting for a bus? So they go back to that same poster, and it's that the bus leaves Sandakan at 8 o'clock. It doesn't come through the park at 8 o'clock. Sandakan is 4 hours away. So really, the bus comes through at 12:30 at night. It comes through after midnight. So I set my alarm. I get like, they let me lay on this bench in their like common area outside. So I lay on this bench, get like a 20-minute snooze. Of course, people are wondering why the hell I'm laying on this bench at a hotel when, you know, there's dormitories and I can just pay for a room for like $3. And I'm like, well, I have a bus to catch in like 2 hours. No point with that. So at about quarter after midnight, go back outside, and I wait till about 1:30 in the morning, and no bus shows up.
It begs the question, why didn't you just stay overnight at that hotel for $3?
Well, I was going, that's what I ended up doing. But I'm like, I really want to get back to KK, because I had to work the next day, I had to check out of my hostel. I'm like, I really want to get back that same night. I really don't want to wait till next day, but then, yeah, that bus never comes. So then I just go back to the hotel. I'm like, they set up cushions. They gave me a blanket and everything. So I was able to sleep for like 3 or 4 hours, actually. It wasn't the worst sleep in the world. And then as soon as there's any sort of daylight, I go back to the park. And they're like, well, there's buses, but you have to wait for the bus to fill up. And it usually doesn't fill up till like noon to get back into town. Or you pay the $65 or $70 for the taxi. And this was at like 6:30 or 7 in the morning. I still had to check out. I still had to do my tutoring at 5, which means I had to prep by like 3. And I still hadn't watched Belgian Mole yet. So I'm like, just give me that taxi. I'm not. There's two guys from Brunei who were offering me a ride, but they weren't leaving till noon either. And I'm like, I can't get back. And if what if they want to stop for lunch or like take pictures and stuff? Like, I can't wait till like 2 o'clock to get back into KK, scramble to check out of my room and get to my hostel and not even brush my teeth or be able to do anything yet. So, yeah, I get back into KK at like 9 o'clock. And they're like, how'd you get back so fast? Weren't you not able to get back to like 1 or 2? I'm like, I couldn't wait until that late.
Did you learn any lessons?
One lesson is always get the phone number for your driver. I guess that's number one. And number two, don't rely on buses in Borneo. Always have a plan B.
And I must admit, it warmed my cold, dead heart to see Logan's frantic Facebook statuses in the past couple of days just going, yeah, I think I'm stranded.
Yeah, because there's no one going back to KK till, like, you know, late the next morning, and it's like over a 2-hour drive. So a 6-hour trip turned into 23 hours. I was only supposed to spend 2 hours in that park. I still only got to spend 2 hours in that park. Part of me thought, well, I'm already here in the morning. Maybe I should explore it for the next few hours. But I didn't have anything with me. I was in t-shirt, shorts, low battery on my phone, low battery on my pocket MiFi. And that was that. That's all I had with me. I had nothing else.
There's some subtle lessons you can pick up on here, I think.
What are the subtle lessons, Michael?
Maybe take like an external charger out with you.
Yeah, that could be one. Or just not have it at low battery.
Yeah, or just not have it at low battery, or maybe make sure you actually have your driver's phone number.
Yeah, driver's phone number was the big one. Yeah, that was, I usually get my driver's phone number 80% of the time, like if, especially if it's a slightly bigger area. But this was such a tiny parking lot, like there's no way the driver can get confused, and it was perfectly communicated to be back at 5. So always, always, always get your driver's WhatsApp number and confirm it before you start driving. And if you don't think you'll have enough time to spend on the park, just don't go, because 2 hours wasn't enough for how much time was spent to get up there.
Yeah, if the only time you're going to get to spend in the park is actually less than it takes to get there, probably isn't worth it.
Yeah, and the thing is, I was so committed by the time we were all on the bus and stuff. I'm like, do I really jump out now? Like, I was so close to jumping out. In fact, I even opened the door, but then that's when the driver was put the key in the ignition. So I'm like, well, what do I do? It was like he couldn't have timed it any worse. If he waited just one more minute, I would have been out of the car.
Yeah.
That's how stupid it was.
But then we wouldn't have got all the fun stories.
Yeah, actually, the good thing is when I woke up, it was the complete layer of fog that surrounded me, which was a really cool visual. And cool thing number two is I now have a place to stay in Brunei if I ever go to Brunei.
Yay!
Because they have a 5-bedroom house and every room has air conditioning.
Maybe you should change your plans.
Yeah, maybe I'll go to Brunei instead of Singapore next.
Anyway, we probably should actually start with this episode.
Yes, we probably should.
So previously, the mole began to sabotage as everyone tried to make Chakar and build towers with chopsticks, but the obsession with Dipsaus cost them 3,000 euros, and a slippery hike had clues solved by the weaker group, and they added 1,650 euros to the pot before Lisbeth was the first victim of the mole.
Lies. Lies was the first victim.
And lies is the theme of this episode.
Yes, it is.
Because we open with an alarm clock and a screen showing the motor home where they were all briefed. At the briefing with everyone, the producers asked them to tell an unlikely lie to the casting team, that they are scared of rabbits. And Gilles warns them that during this episode, he will also lie, but only once.
I'm an Olympic gold medalist.
Are you back with this lie, are we?
Yes. I was a former porn star.
It's a lie because he's actually a current one.
That's what he does the other 11 months of the year. Hosting Belgian Mole only pays so much of the bills. He has college loans to pay.
This has already taken a turn. And at breakfast on day 4, they channel their inner Jet Johnson and have banana pancakes. And apparently, Martijn tells the truth in his sleep, which is helpful for Yuri, who sleeps with him.
Yeah. Are you the mole? That should be the twist next year. 10 people who talk in their sleep.
10 narcoleptics.
Yeah. Everyone gets interrogated while they're sleeping. That should be the way to determine who the mole is. Jill has everyone asleep in the one room, and he's like, okay, we haven't picked a mole yet. Who would be the best mole? And everyone sleepwalks to the chair when Jill informs them if they were the mole or not.
And also, thank you for asking. Yes, I did have a nice birthday.
Shit, yes, it was. Sorry, I've been so absorbed with the mountain. What'd you do for your birthday, Michael?
I went to Comic-Con in Birmingham on Saturday, and I'm currently now looking at a picture signed by Charles Martinet, the voice of Mario and Luigi and everyone. He's nuts.
He's nuts?
Oh, he's delightful, but absolutely insane.
Well, he's the guy who does the voice of Mario for... How many years has he done the voice of him?
About 20 now. But, he had to, like, go and do a photo session halfway through because the queue was pretty long. So about halfway there, he had to go and nip out and do a photo session. And said goodbye as Mario to everyone in the queue. And then as he came back, said hello as Mario. And as he... Because I picked out, like, a headshot for him to sign of him posing with, like, Mario and Luigi and Wario and Waluigi and all the other characters he voices. He signed it as himself, then he signed it as Mario... Then he signed it as Luigi, then he signed it as Baby Mario and Baby Luigi and Wario and Waluigi. And he did all of the voices as he was signing them.
Wow. I wonder how often he practices his penmanship.
And then on Sunday, which was my actual birthday, I just went out for a meal.
Went out to one of your guys' favourite pubs?
Yeah, to the pub that you know very well. because it's my favourite. But yes, that was very nice. Just had a quiet weekend after driving 240 miles to and from Birmingham on Saturday.
But it was worth it, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was so much fun.
Is Birmingham further south or further north?
South.
South? Okay. Did you see a bunch of hunted people complain?
I didn't, because we didn't go into the centre of Birmingham, because where Comic-Con was is kind of southeast of Birmingham. So I just stayed on the motorway. But who else did I see? The voice of Zelda from Breath of the Wild was there as well. I felt really bad for her because she was sandwiched between Charles Martinet on the right-hand side and then Veronica Taylor, who did the voice of Ash in Pokemon.
Right, the voice of Ash Ketchum.
She was sandwiched between those two. She had basically no cue for the entire time that those two had about 50 people each. And Veronica Taylor seems very nice as well. I didn't end up meeting her, but instead of being behind the desk, she was like out the front talking to people, getting pictures with them. She seemed really nice and really friendly.
How old would she be now?
Oof, she's in her 50s, I think.
Was she doing the voice of Ash Ketchum the whole time?
Yes, she was. And all the other characters that she voices, because she did a lot of them in the Pokemon anime and various other animes, I think. I think she does some Sailor Moon voices as well.
Oh, really?
I think so, yeah.
Huh.
But then the same Comic-Con that I went to on Saturday is coming to London in May. I'm not going to that one. But they've just announced that one of the main guys from the Marvel films is going to be there, and he's charging £70 for autographs.
£70 for an autograph? That's even more expensive than William Shatner's prices.
Yeah, given that I was a bit reluctant to pay £25 for Charles Martinet, and, you know, it was well worth it because he's an absolute legend. But £70.
And the thing is, people pay for it, I guess.
Yeah, if you want a photo with him, it's £84.
A photo with him is £84.
Yeah. Like, Charles Martinet had a lot of options. His were £25 for the autograph, £45 if you wanted a photo and an autograph, £45 if you wanted him to record your voicemail for you, and I think it was £65 for a photo and the voicemail, and then a couple of other options as well. But yeah, I was reluctant to pay £25 for Charles Martinet, who is a living legend and was well worth it, but I would not pay £72 for an autograph with anyone.
Yeah, that's way, way too much. That person must be rich.
Well, he's going to be rich in May, given that he's now basically the main attraction for everyone at the Comic-Con, because he's never done any UK cons before. And now he's going to actually be able to charge £70.
That means, like, people are working, probably a lot of people who work in London are paying in their entire day's wage or more just to get that picture, just to get that autograph. Not a picture, an autograph with them.
Meanwhile, Paul Rudd at a Chicago Comic-Con this weekend took a prom picture with someone, I believe. A prom picture with a guy who was dressed as Spider-Man. And it's wonderful.
I have a feeling that was cheaper than £70.
Anyway, we probably should get gone to Belgium more, really, given that we're on my fourth bullet point.
Oh, yes.
So at breakfast, whilst everyone's eating their Jack Johnson-inspired banana pancakes, they spot that a rabbit has appeared overnight, at which point Sassy Gilles in voiceover says it's nothing to do with them. And rabbits seems to be the theme of this episode.
Yeah, because he even mentions it at the execution.
Yeah. And I've got some theories on why rabbits keep getting mentioned. Because nobody has the zodiac sign of being the year of the rabbit, but there's going to be some sort of tenuous link to rabbits with them all, surely.
Does Vietnam even have rabbits?
They must do if they're there.
They didn't get all imported from Belgium? Or Denmark?
So Gilles greets them by the river for their first challenge. And in this challenge, three strong contestants get the opportunity to be under the tutelage of Mr. Tim. And they choose Yuri, Bruno, and Bass.
I really wish they would have picked, like, Ingrid, Kat, and Ava.
You just want to see Ingrid have small children kick her in the stomach over and over and over again.
Just on a repeated loop.
She would not have been able to defend that ball.
No.
And the other six will be sleeping in huts along the river and have to choose their roommates, who they will play with in this challenge. So it's Kat and Ava, Axel and Ingrid, and Elizabeth and Martine. And they have to row to the other side of the river to get the keys to their huts, a route of just over 4 kilometres. For each pair that makes it to the huts in under 2 hours, they get €1,000, and they can use a local rower for two stints of 20 minutes to help, but each time they use the rower, 250 euros is lost from their potential prize pot. And Gilles warns them that the first pair to return get a bed, the second pair get a mattress, and the last pair will spend the evening sleeping on the ground.
There were so many layers to this challenge. This might be one of the most layered challenges ever.
This hurt my head to try and type down and make it simple. I know how Brindles feels when he's trying to do his challenge guides.
And he used to do it without subtitles.
Yeah. Like, the layers to this challenge, especially when that is just actually the first bit of the challenge. When they get to the turnaround point, they then find out that they're going to be sleeping with an animal of some description, so then have to decide which animal they want. Plus, on the way there, they can also fill up tubes of peanuts to earn up to 3,000 euros in addition.
Juggle these balls for... Oh, no, they already did juggling. walk through a maze blindfolded for an extra 1,000 euros. Do Jules's laundry for another 500 euros.
They got to grab the rabbits that are waiting at one side for all them.
Successfully complete the first step of a knitting course for another 500 euros.
So what would you have done if you were in one of these boats? Would you have used your rower immediately? Or would you have saved it?
Am I the mole or am I not the mole?
If you were you. Say you're a contestant.
If I was a contestant... Do I know about all the choices that are going to be along the way?
No, so you don't know anything about the peanuts and you don't know anything about the animals yet.
Yeah, I would wait till towards the end to use the rower as much as possible. Because then people would be overconfident with their leads with their current rowers. And then I can just keep using my rower towards the end.
And also, you might be tired.
Yeah, and then you're more and more tired being out in the humid heat of Vietnam, too.
And Kat and Ava and Ingrid and Axel both use their rowers immediately, and they can earn extra money by peeling peanuts if one pair chooses to fill a tube up to a line. The first tube is worth 500 euros, the second tube is worth 1,000, and the last 1,500 euros. And Kat says that she would rather do the large tube because she'd rather have the bed than the money. Spoken like a true mole, Kat. Spoken like a true mole.
Yes.
And Elizabeth and Martijn are way behind, and use the rower pretty slowly compared to the other two pairs.
It's kind of cruel because people were thinking they were sabotaging a bit more because Martijn just was furious how often everyone else was using their rowers. And then they justified not peeling the peanuts because of how, quote-unquote, selfish the other two pairs were, even though eventually the other two pairs were the only ones who tried to peel the peanuts.
And once they get to the turnaround point, they do have to choose either a reptile, an arthropod, or a mammal to spend the evening with, and they only earn the cash if they spend the night in the room with the animal. And what would you have picked?
That's a tough one. I don't know what I would have done in the moment. I don't think I would have picked the reptile. Yeah, because I'm thinking, like, I've been sleeping in rooms with, like, who knows what on the on the ceiling, so bugs and stuff don't really faze me at this point. I mean, I've been in Southeast Asia for how long now? How long bay now? And the thing that would worry about me about a mammal is it could be like a super friendly dog that doesn't let you sleep the whole night.
But that would be a very pleasant way to spend the evening on the mall, wouldn't it? If you get just a very hyper border collie saying hello to you all evening. There's worse ways to spend the night.
That's true. But what if I really wanted to sleep, though? And there's this collie that keeps barking at every little noise and is just running back and forth around the room and starts jumping on us and stuff.
Depends how well-trained it was, because most border collies would be very well-trained and therefore actually listen to the commands of, please let me sleep.
Well, you'd have to command in Vietnamese.
You just have to learn the Vietnamese for please let me sleep, and it'll work.
I'm thinking more of like, because I've stopped babysitting my sister's dog because that dog is a Shih Tzu, and it just barks nonstop. Like, it can bark for hours and hours.
It lives up to the first syllable of its name.
Yes, exact opposite. How ironic. But yeah, like, if it's a dog like that, then there's no way I'd be picking mammal. Like, if they said, the mammal is your sister's dog, Logan, I'd be like, give me the reptile.
Give me literally anything else.
Yes. Otherwise, there's no way to sleep tonight in that room.
So by process of elimination, you would have chosen the insect then?
Yes, I think that's what I would have chosen.
I think it also depends on whether you're sleeping in a bed or not. Because if you're sleeping in a bed, it's moot which one you pick. If you're sleeping on the floor, it definitely is very changeable, because you wouldn't want to sleep on the floor with a snake around you or a spider around you. So therefore you have to pick the mammal.
Yeah, there's just, we see footage of somebody being constricted by a snake.
Well, you don't want to wake up with something sat on your face, do you? Not unless you're into that sort of thing.
Yeah, not unless you're Jamie.
Oh, I should have known that was coming to now.
Oh, B is the mole. But yeah, like if you're on the floor, true, then that snake is way, way scarier.
Yeah, you just don't want to wake up at 3 a.m. with like a snake crawling all over you or a spider crawling all over you, even though they obviously won't be dangerous.
Yeah, you just see production staff just watch somebody get bitten by a poisonous spider or just wrapped by a snake. I can't breathe.
However, if you're on the floor and a pig is sat on you, maybe you've got a bit of a bigger issue.
Yeah. I like how what ended up being the biggest adversary of all for one of the teams is your partner. The partner was worse than the snake, it was worse than the pig, and it was worse than the gigantic tarantula.
Well, Jill did tell them to pick their roommate carefully.
Number four on that thing, it should have been four choices, number four is Axel.
Axel F-boy.
Axel or a gigantic tarantula? I'll take the gigantic poisonous tarantula.
Some women dream of spending the evening with a pilot. Ingrid is not one of them anymore.
No, she will never be in the cockpit again.
Well, the thing that doesn't make sense there is the fact that if you're going to the dorm and bailing on the challenge because you can't stand Axel snoring, you're still going to the dorm with Axel and therefore he's going to be snoring.
Yeah.
That doesn't make sense.
Maybe she didn't think he was a very loud snorer.
And I know that a lot of people started suspecting Ingrid this week because of this sort of stuff. I still don't think she's the mole, but there's a lot of stuff she's done this week where you go, really? Why?
Yeah. She couldn't put up with snoring for one night.
And Kat and Ava are the first to reach the turning point, and they collect their peanuts and choose the insect. Ingrid and Axel reach it second and choose the mammal, leaving just the reptile for Martijn and Elisabeth. And both pairs choose to skip the 1500 euro tube, and Ava and Kat choose to do the 1000 euro tube, and Ingrid and Axel the 500 one. And at this point, Yuri, Bruno and Bass arrive at Mr. Tim's temple, and he tells them to sit down and they'll stay with him at the temple where he will teach them about Vietnamese culture and martial arts.
That would have been my dream. That would have been my dream task, to be at that temple.
This is so cool.
These the mole didn't use Colombian culture. Belgimol definitely does.
I was sat watching this episode last night just going, oh my god, this is the coolest thing ever. Like, I'm not into martial arts whatsoever, but wow at this experience for them.
People would pay thousands of dollars to have an experience like that.
Yeah, this is genuinely one of the coolest things that they could have possibly done in Vietnam. And these three guys get to be so lucky and actually do it.
It pays to be a strong white male, I guess.
And they first have to grab their room key. It's under a large stone in the lobby, and they have an hour to get it out, and they will earn 1,000 euros for the pot if they do, and also they will actually not have to sleep outside if they do. And they get an array of wonderful items to try and help them, including Baz's balloons.
I just love how they just stare at the balloons like, what the hell do we do with this?
It's an obvious red herring. What are you doing?
That would be funny if they just start blowing up the balloons and like put it next to the stone and just see what happens.
They just ask someone in production to Google, how many balloons do you need to blow up to move a 500 kilo stone?
Yes, they try to make their own makeshift hot air balloon. It's like they have all the balloons and then they like put a lighter next to it hoping it like raises the stone.
And they overthink the entire thing, as the instruction said, the stone rather than this stone.
That'd be funny if they just go on a scavenger hunt throughout the whole temple or throughout all of Vietnam and spend like get a motorbikes and just go an hour in the opposite direction looking for the stone.
Well, this task is another great one that only Belgian Mole could do, because they've done this previously in the Argentina season where they showed the solutions to this sort of logic puzzle, because it wasn't even a physical task, this one. It was a problem-solving task. It's the sort of thing that you would see in a team-building challenge. But the way that they do it is so good that you don't even mind. And also the fact that they just added in obviously random and wrong things like balloons. And Elizabeth and Martijn decide they don't want to do the 1500 tube as they're being forced to sleep on the ground. And when Elizabeth sees that they have to sleep with a reptile, we get a Lloyd-patented Godverdommer. Which, fun fact, I did actually say in the audience when Meryl was revealed as the mole on Vidim.
Too bad nobody speaks Flemish in Amsterdam.
I know, I said quite loudly, Godverdommer.
And then people are like, what? People from all the way from Belgium come here for this?
And I say, bitch please, from the UK. And Ingrid and Axel use their second rowing stint to overtake Kat and Ava. Elizabeth and Martijn also close in as they reach the 1,000 euro tube. And then they get overtaken by Elizabeth and Martijn. And Kat and Ava bail at the 100 euro line and then use their row for the second time. And Ingrid says that she refuses to lose a bed over 100 euros. And after speaking to Elizabeth and Martijn, they decide to peel anyway, but they still get passed.
They did lose a bed over 100 euros. And a mattress.
And they also leave at 100 euros and are still in second. And then Bass works out the solution, but nobody listens to him. So he suggests putting the four beams around the stone and tying them. And Gilles does say in a voiceover that this is the right tactic. And then Mr. Tim comes out with some beer and a hint in a bottle opener. And they solve the hint and get the key to win a bed for the night and 1,000 euros for the pot.
Boss was not suspicious at all this episode. He is off my suspect list.
Yeah, he was obviously a contestant this week. Famous last words, I know.
Because he succeeded at everything.
And he explains to them that the next day they will face a tougher challenge and must learn Võ Văn Nam, a Vietnamese martial art. And then we just get a wonderful montage of Mr. Tim's assistant beating the shit out of people.
Mr. Swan?
Yeah, Mr. Swan. Just beating up Bass and picking on him relentlessly, and it's delightful.
He even knocks him down to the ground. Even does a hip toss.
And then we head back to the river, where Axel F. Boy struggles to row, now they can't use their rower again, and he gets a blister, bless him. And Kat and Ava catch up to them and lie to Ingrid about how long they've got left with their rower, putting Ingrid and Axel into last. And then Martijn and Elizabeth claim the bed, and can earn 500 euros if they stay all night. Kat and Ava can earn 600 euros and claim the mattress, and Ingrid and Axel F. Boy have to sleep on the floor for 600 euros. And then everyone settles in for the night.
Yeah, they're all settled. Peaceful sleep for everybody.
Gilles comes on the TVs in the room and says that their rooms will go dark in 10 minutes, and once the candles in their room go out, their animals will enter.
The animals will be unleashed.
And he also says that they can choose if it's a big or a small animal, and if they choose a big one, they will see an interesting film an hour later.
One of Gilles' collections.
One of Gilles' special collection. And you know who else isn't on my suspect list at all? Elizabeth. When she wonders if crocodiles can jump, because she seriously thinks that they would unleash a crocodile into a hotel room. I know this is Belgian Mole, but there are still some lines that even they won't cross.
Could you imagine a Like, they're thinking of what the possibilities could be. One room has a crocodile, and another room has a zebra, or a giraffe as the mammal.
I mean, seriously.
And what would be the biggest, what's that word? Arthropod. Yeah, arthropod. What's the biggest one that you can think of?
I'm not sure what they would have put in there. Because it could only really be something like a spider.
Like a mutated spider that's been injected with steroids.
It's a reverse Spider-Man. It's A spider that's been bitten by a human.
It's a spider that was bitten by Peter Parker.
Yeah, it's a man spider rather than a Spider-Man.
It doesn't shoot webs, it just goes into a newspaper office and takes pictures.
And no one chooses a small animal because this is the Belgian mole equivalent of the Edge of Extinction twist. And Axel and Ingrid get a pig. And Elizabeth thinks that it's a horse. Because a horse would definitely fit through a room's door.
A Vietnamese hut. That's probably like shorter than Axel. And they're going to fit through a horse.
I love Elizabeth so much. She was just unintentional comedy this week. And Elizabeth and Martijn get a snake, and Kat and Ava get a tarantula, which they completely look at the wrong side of the room for.
They just stare at a piece of wall. It's not scary.
And by far, the pig was the easiest roommate, I would say, in terms of being able to sleep in the same room as it.
And they still somehow managed to lose.
Yeah, because the thing is, the pig might be noisy, but at least it's not going to crawl all over your face.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like you can easily just put earplugs in and block out the pig. And as long as it doesn't go charging around the room, you'll be fine. With the other two, you're not going to really be able to physically avoid it touching you if it gets on your sleeping arrangement.
Yeah.
And after an hour, everyone watches the film, and it's the results of their quest to say that they hate rabbits. And something I found really interesting in this one that no one else seemed to pick up on is the fact that, even if I didn't suspect her already, Kat probably had the most believable lie. Because she didn't just come out right and say, oh, actually, I hate rabbits, because one of my friends had a dead one in the freezer. Or, you know, I just think they have really suspicious eyes. What Kat said was that she hates chickens and rabbits.
That is a good lie.
She makes it sound a bit more believable.
Yeah, to actually have just more than one thing rather than, like, I hate anything but the thing that may come up during the show.
I think they're just peppering in hints about who they would shortlist throughout all of these episodes.
Be funny if one person had a really terrible lie.
Well, Elizabeth's lie was pretty bad, as was Ava's.
What were their two lies again?
They just half-assed it. One of them said that their friend had a dead rabbit in the freezer, I think it was. And at this point I started thinking, maybe the rabbits are a hint. So I had a little look to see if anyone was born in the year of the rabbit, given that in the temple evening scene, we saw what sort of animal each person's zodiac was, at least the three who were there. So in no particular order, Bruno's a goat, Lisbeth is a snake, Martijn's a pig, Axel's a horse, Ingrid and Kat are rats, Yuri and Bass are tigers, Elizabeth is an ox, and Ava is a horse.
You just sound clips saying Ava is a horse.
And Ava is a horse.
You know what you should do is like release a visual roster, but it's just everyone's zodiac signs as their face.
I mean, I could do that, but that's a lot of effort.
Yes, it is. That's why I said you do it.
Yeah, I know. This is the sort of thing where I go, you know what, if you want that, you do it.
It's like BoJack Horseman.
And the three martial artists could also watch the film because they got into their room. Lucky them, but they don't have to sleep with any animals. They just have to have small children beat the crap out of them the next day.
And Mr. Schwan.
And Kat and Ava give up, and the 600 euros goes away, and everyone else decides to try and sleep. And Axel falls asleep. Unfortunately, the pig wakes up, and Ingrid is awake too. But Axel is worse than the pig because he snores, and they also give up their 600 euros.
A lot of money lost on that challenge. I have to say the mole was in that group.
I would be inclined to agree, for a reason that I'll get into in a minute. So everyone wakes up on day 5, and the losers greet Gilles at breakfast before the winners are brought in, and they do earn a huge 500 euros out of 6,000 euros that was possible. And the reason that I think that the mole was in this group is because it's way easier to control this task than it is the next one.
Yes, it was way easier. There are so many ways you could sabotage, because there was like 5 different challenges really rolled into one. You could justify not doing the peanuts because you were last and you're upset everyone else was rowing, and pass it off as an emotional decision. You could just keep using your rowers to get ahead, making other people use their rowers to keep up with you, losing thousands of euros that way. You can only peel the peanuts to maybe 100 euros when you could have done more. And then say, oh, you're scared of whatever animal is thrown into the room with you, and then you earn zero.
But the other fun part of this is the fact that actually this is a challenge where the mole can try and earn as much money as possible, because they know they will be able to lose it later.
Yes, they can just leave the room. They could max out with, like, get the 2,000 euros that they could have had, and then be like, nope, I don't want to be in a room with Axel snoring, and then you're down to zero.
And I'm calling this now, given that we know that the mole loves to operate in the dark, when we see the reveal scenes, there will probably be a night vision clip from this challenge of the mole making a face and being like, I'm not scared of a pig or a spider.
Yes, that's a good point, because the other person can't see.
I strongly predict that we are going to see some sort of cut footage from this challenge. And on day 5, everyone's brought to the temple to greet the martial artists. And to earn their cash, all they have to do is not get pushed back by Mr. Tim's students enough to make a ball fall off a pedestal. And the first round is worth 200 euros and doubles each round. And in a Weakest Link style money tree, they can cash out after every round. If they do, the following round will be worth 200 euros again.
Yeah, where was Anne Robinson for this task?
I could make a funny quip, but I think no one would actually want her to come back and do Weakest Link. She came back a couple of years ago and did like a charity special, and I don't think she was very good at it.
No?
I think she's kind of lost her touch.
Like, how was she bad? Was she not able to insult the contestants as well as she normally does?
She was just phoning it in, I think.
I wish she would have gotten really offensive in her later seasons.
Who Wants to Be a Millionaire's come back in the past year or so and is really, really good even with a different host. Weakest Link, I don't think, was very good with the old host. I think if they're going to bring it back properly, they do need to find a new host for it.
You know what was terrible for the US for the Weakest Link was the guy who replaced Anne Robinson.
I don't even remember ever seeing any episodes without Anne Robinson from the US one.
Yeah, they did like two or three. Damn it, to Wikipedia. I gotta confirm it. Because it was on Game Show Network a lot with the new guy.
The great thing is that every single country that adapted Weakest Link seemed to also try and find a local version of Anne Robinson. So it was always a slightly older woman with that weird red-coloured hair in that haircut. It was eerie if you go to, like, France's version or Australia's version. They all did the same thing.
They all wanted their version of Anne?
Yeah, like an Anne Robinson knockoff.
Maybe she'll be cloned eventually, like how Barbara Streisand clones her dogs.
Having said that, if Weakest Link ever came back in the UK, I would be all over that like a rash, because I always wanted to go on Weakest Link. Weakest Link and Millionaire are the only two quizzes that I would ever still go on, I think, that I haven't been on already.
George Gray. George Gray was his name.
Never heard of him.
Yeah, they did 3 seasons with Anne Robinson for a total of 83 episodes, 10 of which went unaired. They didn't air 10 episodes of it. And then the George Gray guy did 2 seasons for a total of 324 episodes.
Holy moly.
Yes, so he did 4 times as many episodes as Anne, so that's when they were doing all the specials you would see on, like, Family Feud and stuff, where it was, like, Wrestler's Week or Survivor Week and Reality TV Stars Week. And yeah, he just was not good.
Fun fact, he's now the announcer on Price is Right.
George Gray?
Yep.
That's a step down.
So yeah, if they manage to survive all 5 rounds without cashing out, they can earn 3,200 euros for the pot. So the first round is with 4 of the small students for each of the adults, and they survive that one. In the second round, they get 5 students each, with the addition being a yellow belt. Bruno struggles, but they survive that one as well. And here's my question. Would the mole want to gamble, or would they want to cash out quickly? There's 2 schools of thought here.
Well, so, I mean, the mole doesn't know how well the contestants are going to do in the next few rounds. Here's a thought. Do you think the mole could have been in the martial arts group? If you're Bruno, do you just pretend like you're really struggling and tempt your group into constantly cashing out?
I feel like the mole wouldn't want to be in an overnight group. in that respect, because they can't have control over both challenges if they are in the martial arts group.
Right. I'm just playing devil's advocate here.
Because if you're Bruno, you basically just have a night off being the mole and rely on the fact that everyone's going to get freaked out. Whereas if you are in the rowing group, then you can at least influence your bit of the money in that challenge, and then you also get control over the money tree in the martial arts challenge.
Axel was the only one who was really pushing to never cash out, right?
Yeah.
Which they would have succeeded at. Granted, it was going to be a very, very, very big gamble, as we will see by the end of the challenge.
Yeah, they should have stuck with their guns, but also, it's a choice between making guaranteed money or gambling it.
If they didn't cash out, they were only going to succeed by 0.2 seconds. Like, they even, Jill said they had to review the tape.
I think the mole would want to cash out early and cash out often.
You mean try to cash out at least twice?
Yeah, because the mole's remit is not to keep money out of the pot, it's to get as little money into the pot as possible. And those things are not mutually exclusive. So if they can keep all the money out of the pot, for example, by bailing out of the room, then they'll do that. But in a situation like this, they're probably not going to get away with banking €0 unless the martial artists are really bad. And that's not something they have control over, so the easiest way to minimize the amount of money in there is to cash out and cash out often.
Right, and they still got one cash out of it.
Well, two they got out. They got two and then, because they ended up with €1,200.
Right.
Because they cashed out at 800, then at 200, and then they had the 200 at the end.
Right. Forgot about that. So yeah, they really, that mole, whoever was the mole really would have had to come from that group then, because there was a lot of money lost.
It's an easy way for them to lose another €2,000 out with the pot for that one. And they decide to keep on going for the third round, and this time it's six students each, including two yellow belts. Bruno gets knocked down again. They just survive. And one of his students gets a little bit overzealous and tries to boot the ball right at the end.
Okay. I wonder what the punishment would have been if she like knocked the ball over clearly after time. How her masters would have disciplined her.
They would have lifted up the 500-kilo stone that Baz put some balloons under and said, "This is where you're sleeping tonight."
Yeah. Or just tether it to her. You lack discipline.
And they decide to cash out at €800. Naxel disagrees, but he is outvoted by the rest of the team. And in the fourth round, a black belt gets added to each of the groups.
Should have been more black belts, I think.
Well, there was at least one more who got added for the final round.
Yeah.
And they earn another €200 from doing that, but cash out again to guarantee the €1,000 at least. And then in the final round, Bruno is knocked out of the way at the very last second, but the ball hit the ground just too late, so they do earn the final €200 for a total of €1,200 out of a possible €3,200 for this challenge, €2,750 out of a possible €10,200 for the episode, and €6,150 of a possible €24,200 for the season so far. And Gilles warns them that the test and execution is just around the corner, and whoever finishes the test fastest will get an opportunity in the next episode.
That is a brand new twist. I don't think any version has done that.
It is a brand new twist, but this is the sort of twist where my ears start pricking up and going, what are they planning?
Yes, there's definitely like a, what's gonna happen?
Yeah, what are we gonna see soon? So Kat suspects Ingrid, Axel and Ava, and she thought it was weird to go for Insect. Ingrid suspects Martijn and Elisabeth as they didn't take the sack of peanuts. Elisabeth doesn't suspect Martijn as he didn't bail on the snake. Axel suspects Ingrid as she didn't mind a dog, cow or sheep. How she thought they were going to get a cow through the door, I don't know. But she did mind a pig and used that as an excuse to bail. And Yuri says that Bass tried to mislead with the stones. And Bass said that the film had lots of hints and he thinks that Ava is suspicious. And before typing in any names, Gilles says that they are hunting for the white rabbit amongst them, who is the mole.
Well, they're all white, so can't rule anyone there.
It's going to be something like someone's favourite book is Alice in Wonderland, or Alice's Curious Adventures in Wonderland.
Yeah. Do we have the mole's library? I know we have the mole's playlist, but do they have a library too?
Not that I know of, but the mole's playlist, I have not had a look at in the last few weeks. But they did, when I checked after week one, have that wonderful version of Ready or Not from the ending of that episode. And it is now on Spotify, so I'm probably going to subscribe to it, given some of the choices are really good. And now for the fun bits. Ava gets an instant red screen, but as Gilles takes her away, he says that she's not the eliminee. This is the lie that he said he was going to tell during the episode. And he types in the actual eliminee's name and not Ava's, and she was actually the fastest person to complete the test. And she alone can ensure that no one goes home, and we'll get instructions later. And she's left in a car alone to end the episode. Now, Logan Saunders, what did this remind you of?
It may or may not have reminded me of Ruth.
It was a shot-for-shot remake of the ending of the first episode of the Argentina season, when Ruth was trapped in the car, down to just one light above the car being visible. It was a shot-for-shot remake of it. And if you've ever listened to this podcast, you will know how much I adore that ending. It's my favourite ending of any Maul episode ever, because it's just so wonderfully vicious. Of going, you just got eliminated. We're going to leave you in a car in the middle of nowhere. Oh, by the way, there's a paint bomb.
Poof.
And the fact that we also mentioned this to Gilles last year has not gone unnoticed by me as well. The fact that Gilles blatantly taunted us in the first episode and now is just bringing back my favourite twist ever, but subverting it, is just delightful. And incredibly big-headed of me to say it, but it's still delightful.
That is awesome that they brought back the paint bomb and they're completely fooling the contestants as to what the actual outcome is going to be. And I like the reaction shot for next week where everyone finds out, or when Ava says, actually, it's one of you guys that needs to be saved.
And the best thing about this is the fact that the Next Time trailer is kind of about a minute long, maybe 90 seconds. Because it's just the first bit of the next challenge. So next time, the old mole favourite, paint bomb, threatens to eliminate someone in the room, the rabbits return, and Ava looks legitimately scared at having to handle them, before she reveals the truth. So the first question, I guess, is who is actually going to be the one that needs to be saved?
I'm going to guess Ingrid.
I mean, Ingrid would fulfil the trope of the person who gets the car bomb, but the question is whether anyone's actually going to get eliminated because of this.
If they're actually going to work together?
Yeah.
I don't know. Axel probably doesn't want to do it.
Yeah, because the first bit of the Next Time trailer was everyone trying to decide whether they're actually going to play at all or whether they're just going to let Ava be sacrificed. So the question for the mole in this sort of situation is whether there is money at stake or not. If there's money at stake, as there was in the Ruth game, it's not in the mole's best interest to help much, unless the group is just not going to help at all. If it's literally just saving someone, as is unlikely, then it's in the mole's best interest to cooperate and cooperate as much as is physically possible, because there's more people to disguise their identity.
Right.
Also, will Ava get anything out of saving someone?
For her? She could really toy with people in this challenge to try and get information.
Yeah. If I was in Ava's situation, I would have to have some sort of incentive to help people.
Yeah.
Because if you save someone, there's going to be a double elimination at some point.
And double eliminations are a struggle to get through.
Yeah. You have to be really lucky to survive a double elimination. So there's got to be a pretty big incentive for her to help actually orchestrate a double elimination.
Yeah. I have nothing to add.
So, other than Ingrid, who do you think's vulnerable next week?
Let's see. I feel like Bruno is probably going to get tired out, if that challenge was any indication.
Do you blame him, given how he got the shit kicked out of him by 12-year-olds?
You know what would have been great is, for like the last round, they think, oh, it's all little kids, and then they bring out Mr. Shin, or Mr. Schwan, and Mr. Tim, and then they just start launching attacks.
There's a surprise sixth round.
You can quadruple the money in the pot.
Bruno, I will personally put 10,000 euros into that pot if you could take a hit from Mr. Tim.
And you will get a double exemption. You will be safe for the next 2 weeks. okay, guys, it's launched like 20 feet. Boom!
I just want to see Mr. Tim go, like, nuclear on him.
Yeah, he just quickly shaves off his white beard and just goes, ah!
And who's on your suspect list?
Oh, God, there is so many suspicious things this week with the bigger group. It was really tough. Like, Martine and Elizabeth, they could have been sabotaging just by just using the emotional, oh, everyone else used their rowers, so we're not going to be helpful at all. But then they ended up earning 500, they were the only ones who earned any euros anyway. So maybe they're not the mole then. And then, who was the other group? Ingrid and Axel? Maybe Axel intentionally pretended to snore really loud to make Ingrid quit. I don't know if you can fake snore. But I think the most suspicion falls on Kat and Ava this week because they started out fast using the rowers. They didn't really peel that many peanuts when trying to get everyone to peel the peanuts. And they also left the room with an animal that's not really dangerous. It's just going to crawl around.
The question for me is whether the mole would want to be in Ava's position.
That's the thing, too. So are we just going all in on Kat then for like the third week in a row?
I am, personally. But I'm not sure if the mole would want to single themselves out that early and get in the Ava position.
Or maybe they know everyone will think that. And maybe they're super confident with their ability to deceive that they are going to take a chance like that.
Because the problem is, if the mole is in Ava's position, then they're going to have to try and win the game regardless to subvert any attention away from themselves.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Whereas if they're in the larger group, then yeah, they're probably going to get a bit of paint on them, especially if they're sat next to the person who's going to get showered in red paint. But also, they can hide in the group a bit more. Especially early on, most moles don't want to be isolated. And especially when this is a mole who, by design, has not a lot of information.
I'll tag along just for this week to say Kat is probably the most suspicious. And probably number two suspect. Let's see. I might go Martine as number two suspect. Because he could have influenced how other people ultimately play this challenge because of how over the top he was with, well, they did this, so I'm going to do this.
Yeah, with Martine, the concern is whether it's a mole who's trying to just get as little as possible in the pot or whether the mole's trying to get nothing in the pot.
Yeah, because, I mean, he really did screw with the other two teams too by saying, well, you guys did this, I'm not going to help. It was very seen out of him. And let's see, number three? Maybe we'll throw in Ingrid at number three.
Yeah, I think my top three are the same, but I would swap Ingrid and Martine. Ingrid rose up in my estimations this week just because she was a little suspicious when she guessed the pig.
Right. And then Ava, I think, will be number four. And I will applaud her if she was gutsy enough to be in that solo position.
The other thing that I have noticed being mentioned online is Yuri's t-shirt. Yuri's t-shirt is potentially a clue for him because this week it said, I don't know anything, or something along the lines of that. But I feel like they can't do many physical clues this year. And I'm happy to be wrong on this, and I'm happy to be proven wrong in May when we find out who the mole is. But I feel like a lot more of the clues are going to come from post-production and from situational stuff that they can hide in the episodes, rather than actual physical ones like Peter's blinking last year, or wearing suspicious t-shirts, or always wearing slippers. Because if the mole was cast on location, they're not going to be able to prepare for all that stuff, unless production have brought along t-shirts for them to be snuck in their bag.
Right. And they had three potential moles too, which means they would have three potential sets of clues they need planned beforehand.
Yeah, so it's got to be something situational, which is why I'm a bit hesitant to say that the rabbits might be a clue, because the rabbits can only really be a clue if either someone's born in the year of the rabbit, which nobody is in this season, or, alternatively, if someone's a fan of Alice in Wonderland or something else that's associated with white rabbits, or magic, for example. If someone's a secret magician.
Secret magician. With the juggling?
Yeah. If someone's a secret magician, then hats off to them, because the hat will, let's be honest, probably contain, like, flowers and a wand and, well, a rabbit. But also, that is a wonderful clue to hide in there, and I would commend the production team in managing to get so many rabbits within 4 days of casting a mole.
Could you imagine getting a plane to fly from Belgium to Vietnam and it's just all rabbits on the plane? This season is sponsored by Trix. Trix are not just for kids.
Illusion slogan. Trix are what a hoarder's for money. Or crack!
Well, I think that does it for me. Anything to add, Michael?
Yeah, I think it does it for me as well. So thank you for listening to this Demolvality recap. You can join us next week for more mole hunting. I still can't say that phrase. If you've got any questions, feel free to contact us on our Facebook page, Reality TV Warriors, and our Twitter account, RTV Warriors, or on Twitter pages, MJ Harms over me, and Logos of Quacky for Logan. See you next week.
Peace out, and just chill till the next of flavoring.
Yeah.